was on vacation last week.
Yeah.
And we took Timmy to the zoo.
How'd it go?
We expected it to be amazing. He loves dogs, loves animals, loses his mind every time we see dogs.
The zoo?
Well, we assume that would translate. You know, like, here's an animal you would like. If you like a dog, you like animals, you know, so.
Okay, yeah.
Did not care at all. It was, he was just on a walk for all his concerns and purposes. A very slow, boring walk, because we'd stop every 20 feet.
Stare into this cage.
The only animal he had any response to was a bald eagle, so.
Wow,
very patriotic.
A proud American boy.
Yeah.
Yes. You're raising him right.
All right, well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunny podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. There we go, I got it.
Yeah.
A week away, and I'm back on. Yes. Okay. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
There it is. Yeah. Good to be back. Great job on the pod when I was gone, you guys.
Aww.
Thank you.
I was happy to listen as a listener, put on, you know, a new hat.
We did it all for your approval. So
that's right.
You're welcome.
Earned it. Patrick likes it.
Yes.
Season, please.
Yes. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I love storytelling and story too, so I'm really sad I was not a part
of it. And Star Wars.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on that I was just like talking to myself in the car. I'm like, these are the things I would say.
See, we're right. Yep. We said that.
I'm going to release, say, like a commentary, you know, that you can listen to the podcast and listen to my comments on top of it.
I love it.
Sounds fun. Well, we were going to do a part two, right?
We're thinking, come back to that.
Maybe we'll invite you for that.
Next time Patrick's on vacation. I mean,
we'll schedule. It's fine.
Yeah, tonight on the pod, well, I don't know what I said tonight, because you probably aren't listening at night, and we're not recording it at night. Yes. So.
Maybe you listen to this as you fall asleep.
Maybe, yeah.
Just have our dulcet tones lull you into a sense of calm and restfulness.
Yeah. I assume people are just listening to this 24/7. It's kind of like
on a loop.
Yeah, we have so many now that they're just listening to the podcast just every time, you know. So, yeah, we got an election coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about the election.
Whoa. There's an election coming up?
I know.
Is this the news?
Wait a second.
Is this the news? I don't know if you knew. Here is a national election.
Yeah.
Yes.
November the 3rd
Correct.
Is the official day. I've already voted. Ooh. Have you
Me
all
too.
Voted?
Yes.
Yes. And I'm glad because I thought it was the 6th.
So yeah,
up until about 10
it.
Seconds ago. Yeah. So it's a good thing.
It's like on Sunday.
I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Yes. I pre-voted. We went to a drive-through voting place.
Ooh.
You didn't have to leave the car. So it was amazing.
That sounds fun. Did you have to sit in line?
No, it was no line. Okay. Just pulled into a little thing. A guy handed us the little machine through the window. And Kat voted, and then I voted. So
very cool.
Yes.
I stood in line in the rain, so I felt like I was extra dedicated to the process of voting and earned extra democracy points.
That's like
in my democracy crown.
Right?
It is. I'm like, I'm going to stand here while it's raining for 40
minutes.
Because I care. And then my wife went today, and she's like, no line. I was like, cool.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
It was like 20 minutes.
If I had waited 3 days, I could have waited for no line, too. That's fine. I was anxious.
That's what we'll be talking a little about, the election. We got a study here
we're
going to go over before.
Cool.
But first, some news. Have you guys been to Subway?
Yes. Never? I actually, this is a point of contention in my house. I love Subway.
Ooh. Eat fresh. Okay.
Yeah. Michael thinks it's like the
Are you a Jared
nastiest.
Fan?
I mean.
Well, who is now?
Right.
Oh, did he do a thing? I don't know.
Yes.
He did some things. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We won't talk about it.
Never mind. No more Jared. All right. Jared's out.
Jared has been canceled.
Yeah.
Okay. No more Jared.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Got it. All right.
But I love Subway. It was like all I could eat when I was pregnant. So
That's a fun pregnancy for
everybody.
There was
a period of my life where I was into Subway. Now,
aren't you like
I haven't
not
gone
supposed
in like
to
8 years.
Eat deli meat when you're pregnant?
Probably.
I don't think you're supposed to. Yeah. But.
Yeah.
Great, turned out fine.
Well, all just I good. Wanted was razor clams. I saw somebody eating them on TV, had never had them before, had to have them. Of course, you cannot eat
I don't
them.
Even know what it is, but okay.
Yeah, they're
cool.
like a canned, like, skinny clam.
Sounds
I don't know.
Awful.
Still have not had one.
Sounds disgusting.
I would have killed a person for a razor clam.
Yikes.
And so you're like.
Instead, I got Subway and deli meat.
All right. Trade offs.
What is your go to at Subway? Let me ask you that. If you were to go to Subway, what would you get?
Spicy Italian.
Yeah, me too. The spicy Italian, maybe the meatball. Probably one of those, still.
Mm. Yeah. The meatball, I'm always disappointed in the meatball because I always want it to be better than it is.
And more meatballs.
Yeah, it looks so good in the picture, and it is always never that.
Yeah, they don't give you a lot of meatballs.
No.
Elise, what was your pregnancy sandwich of choice?
My pregnancy sandwich of choice was just like a turkey with bell peppers and lettuce and cheese.
Okay. Sure.
These days I do just a veggie.
Just a veggie.
The one time a year.
So just veggie and bread?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean with cheese on it though.
Well, that's
and oil and vinegar.
Veggie and cheese and bread.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is like a salad on a sandwich.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of like the
or a veggie sandwich.
It's kind of like the bread becomes the crouton. It's like you've put your salad inside a crouton.
That is the ideal salad to begin with.
Right,
that
it is.
Ratio of crouton to veggie.
Agreed. Yep.
Well, here's the thing about Subway, though.
Uh-oh.
Scientists in Ireland have said that the bread does not bread. It does not count as bread.
Okay.
That their ratios are off because their bread is actually closer to cake than it is bread.
Excellent. All right.
So not a crouton.
It's not a crouton. Yes, it's a salad with a pound cake thrown on there.
It's a sweet crouton.
Right. I'm fine with this.
Yes. Yeah. The amount of sugar to flour ratio in their bread is too high. So it does not qualify to be classified as bread in Ireland.
No, I actually happened to see this story, and it wasn't just scientists, but the Irish Supreme Court made a ruling.
Yes.
Declaring a law. That Subway is not allowed to be called bread.
Yes.
That's how far this went.
What type of cake would you like your sub on?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. You know, you go to Subway, you get a meatball cake, you know.
Yeah.
Like.
Cool.
Yeah, my Asiago Italian cake? Yeah, that sounds tasty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's also it's not similar. It's interconnected. There's a law in France that restaurants have to keep the tables stocked with bread.
Ooh.
Which I love.
Sure.
Would they be everything about that.
If they put Subway bread on the tables, would they still be following the law?
Great
or would this
question.
Be
great question.
Like a Subway in France. Yeah. Do they have to bring out special digging. Actual bread?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this is going to be a hot topic for the people.
Yeah.
Now I think our food and drug safety standards may still classify Subway bread as bread.
Yes.
Yeah. But in Ireland,
well,
at least,
FDA does not care.
Yes. Well, you know, if you got a loaf of white bread, I'm sure it's got quite a lot of sugar in there for the store.
Yeah.
And I read.
I think Ireland has like a law about what's taxed and what's not. And so the question was, should Subway's bread qualify for this tax exempt thing? And so they had to say, no, it doesn't because
you
it has such
tax.
A high sugar stamp.
Yes, because it's no longer.
The cake test, yes.
Yeah, in the article I read, I saw a lot of comments from European commenters saying that American bread is way too sweet.
Not all American bread is
cake. All American bread
is like, this is no
sweet.
Surprise to them. They're like, of course it's cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but the criticism of them is their bread is too salty, so.
I like salty bread.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm a fan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what cake would you want? What would be a good, deli meat cake?
Oh.
Yikes. So now I'm thinking of, like, a real cake with deli meat in it. I'm like, ooh, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
But if I were going to, it'd probably be, like, a chocolate and ham, because it's kind of like a Black Forest ham situation happening.
Sure,
I feel like that could be good.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, Elise, you're giving a dirty look over here.
I just feel ill.
Yeah, what cake is going to go with
your
veggie
sub? Out of a can, all right?
We are clam sub, yeah.
I was pregnant. That excuses it.
You know, I once got a grilled cheese donut, and it was delicious. So,
yeah.
You know, I could see, a donut cake, a donut
a
sandwich.
Donut, yeah.
You donut know. Hamburger.
Yeah, I could do that. I could
get down with that.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of Subway, so it all sounds pretty gross to me when you throw in the Subway meat, because it's all like stuck together.
A little congealed.
Like, a little congealed.
Yeah. Hence why I do the veggie sandwich these days.
Or you could also not go to Subway.
I could.
There are other sandwich places out there.
But if you don't go to Subway, you don't get the aroma of Subway on you for the next 3 months.
That's
right.
True.
Of their cake
bread. It's just with you everywhere you go.
It's kind of based in
It is. Yeah.
No. I have one other short news article.
Okay.
Yeah, let me pull this from my computer. I did not print this one off.
Well, let's time code that.
I know.
No, it's fine. No,
mistakes
fine.
Are being
totally
made.
Fine. Totally fine.
Week,
all right. a priest in Bay Village said someone called police to report a homeless person.
Oh, I heard about this.
Turns out,
it's
actually a statue of Jesus.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah, this is in Ohio. This is not a,
not
a proud moment.
It was a priest that called the police on Jesus?
No. Yeah. The priest of St. Barnabas Episcopal Church, they're hosting this statue. It's a traveling statue. It's of Jesus asleep on like a... on a bench. It's supposed to invoke, you know, homelessness, tying Christ into the homeless community that they're not overlooked or forgotten. So that's what it was.
Sounds like it was effective.
Yes. Right. Yeah, super effective, I guess. And someone called the police on it within 20 minutes of it being out there. So they put up the statue. Immediately, someone calls the police.
It's,
they are part of a suburb, the Bay Village, that does not see a lot of poverty. It's a fairly nice suburb. And so, I mean, I think that this is a question here of like, well, what should, you know, what should this person have done? If you see a homeless person on a bench, is calling the police reasonable? I guess in reality, who else should you call?
Which is probably part of the problem.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't really have another option of like, if you saw a homeless person in distress, whether that's medical, psychosis, whether that's drug-induced, 911 is kind of your only option. That's what we got here as Americans. So,
social worker.
Yeah. The Pastor Martin is hopeful the person who called the police did so hoping they would be able to provide resources to the person. And was not just about getting a homeless person out of the streets.
Here's hoping.
Yeah, but I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. And I guess effective. If you're seeing the statue and it immediately invokes homelessness, but I guess then maybe the people who most need this to connect it to Jesus won't get close to the statue at all. All right.
Well, that was a downer.
No kidding. We'll get back to talking about Subway. But not
Well, let's talk about something that's not a downer. Politics. So this is a study from PRRI. Are you familiar with them?
I think we've used a PRRI study before on the pod.
It's
I remember those letters. And I think they stand for something, and we looked it up last time.
I also am not going to look it up today.
That's fine. I feel like I remember that from something.
Yeah, sure, why not? And this is an article from Relevant Magazine.
Okay.
Who we definitely have used on the podcast before. So they're quoting the study. And they have a short, it's like a two-minute article. I read parts of the study, and I'll link to it. It is not a two-minute study. It is very long.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, so
studies are important.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll be able to provide some insights from the further study. But they kind of cherry-picked some of these things. So this is a study that they put out all about the upcoming presidential election.
Okay.
And so it has a lot of, if you're a Republican, if you're a Democrat, if you're an independent, how are you feeling about X things?
Mm-hmm.
And quite a lot of religion attached to it.
Okay.
If you are part of a religious body, how are you feeling about certain aspects of the election? And they have decided, the creators of the study from PRI, to also separate that by kind of by race and by further denominations within Christianity.
Okay.
So they've divided up into Protestant and Catholic.
Sure.
And then other Christian, you know.
It's Reformation weekend. Seems appropriate to divide it up between
Protestant and mainline. And mainline. The three major branches and then other. Protestant, evangelical, mainline, and Catholic.
The three major branches and other.
And the others.
Well, I mean, that's what they have. And then they also divided it by race. So we have white, black, and Hispanic attached to those things as well. All right, and so we're really putting you to focusing on those aspects of the study, is what kind of the religious community is saying.
Seems
not
reasonable.
The Democrats or the Republicans.
Right.
Since we are, you know, how our Christian faith affects the culture around us, that's what we want to discuss.
That's kind of what we're here for.
All right, so here's the opening of this article here from Relevant. Statistically speaking, if you're a religious American, the coronavirus pandemic is probably one of your top concerns, how you consider how to cast your vote for the next president. And the study we're going to look at is going to back that up.
Okay.
And the next sentence, that is, of course, unless you're a white evangelical. And we're going to take a look at this because the white evangelicals kind of buck the trend of the rest of the Christian Christians demographics that they study. And, you know, Pastor David, you and I were kind of discussing this the other day a little bit. Sometimes we end up talking about the evangelical church a lot, which we're not a part of the evangelical church. You know, so we know, even though we're the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America,
we're not part of the
church. When we say evangelical, we're not meaning the same thing as other branches of evangelical.
Right, yeah.
And I think part of the reason that we end up talking about the evangelical church a lot, and, you know, I think you and I discussed this a little bit earlier this week, is the mainline church, which we're a part of, which is more of a moderate or progressive church, compared to the evangelicals, is honestly a little more boring. Like, yeah, I think they're a little tamer. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. they don't have quite the fire attached to them or the political persuasion mm-hmm. of yeah. the evangelical church. So when we think of Christians, especially Christians in politics, you're probably thinking of evangelicals.
Yeah.
Yep.
That the mainline church just does not have that same national presence.
Yep.
Even if there are plenty of mainline Christians out there who are engaged in politics, who are writing great books,
yep.
who are putting themselves forward in the culture, I just don't think they have quite the presence as the evangelical mm-hmm. branches of Christianity.
Yeah, and I don't think you get as far in politics by coming out and saying, hey, I'm a Lutheran, and that really matters to me. That doesn't get you as much... what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't get you as much leg work as much as coming out and saying, hey, I'm a... Sure. evangelical that goes to such and such church from wherever, and you know, I think it just gets you into a different place, and so
And I think of the three evangelicals, mainline and Catholics. Evangelicals are the biggest in America, especially when you are looking at white America.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So because the Catholic Church is going to have a large branch of Hispanic mm-hmm. Voters, and not just voters but members. So So they kind of had in this study the top three critical issues by religious affiliation.
I have a question.
Yes.
And you may or may not know this.
Sure.
Were people, when they were called for the study, I'm assuming called, when they were contacted for the study, were they selecting from a list what their top three
yes.
were? Okay. So they had a list of options, and you yes. got to select your top three concerns for the selection.
Yeah.
Okay.
I you know, so these are the percentage of who view the issues as critical. These are critical points. So
critical.
If you're going to say your top three, these are your three most important.
All right.
So for the white evangelical Protestant, number one, probably is no surprise, is abortion.
Okay.
If you mm-hmm. follow politics, there are mm-hmm. going to be strong pro-life advocates in mm-hmm. that demographic. Number two, fairness of presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, terrorism.
Okay.
Yeah. So if we were to look at the other ones, there's things about the white evangelicals that are not like the others.
Yeah.
If we're looking, playing Sesame Street game here.
Yeah. Two out of the three.
Yes. So abortion and terrorism do not make the top three for any other demographic.
Yeah. Okay.
Fairness of presidential elections makes the top three for most of the demographics.
Yeah.
That for some reason, this presidential season, that is key amongst religious voters.
And we were talking a little bit about this before the podcast, but I think none of us remember having that be a concern in past elections.
And I certainly wasn't concerned about it.
And I'd really be curious. I'm assuming PRRI has done studies like this for previous elections. I'd really be curious where that ranked in previous years and how that's escalated. And we don't have that information. I'm just would be really curious about that because it is. I mean, it's across the board here. Everybody seems to be concerned.
I'm not
about
even
that.
Sure this would make a list of things to be concerned about in 2016. This was not in the national discussion on any level. You know, like, I don't think, like, that this would be there at all in 2016. And now, here, 4 years later, it's a top three issue for Christians for the majority of Christian sub-demographics here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that one's going to appear, just so our listeners, they don't have this this kind of handy graphic in front of them.
Yeah.
But that's going to appear for white mainline Protestants, for black Protestants. That's going to appear for white Catholics,
mm-hmm.
for Hispanic Catholics. That's going to appear for other Christians, for non-Christian religions. All of those are going to have fairness of presidential elections is across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So the only ones that don't have that would be Hispanic, Protestant, and unaffiliated. That's it.
Yeah.
So an unaffiliated would be, non-Christians. How do they see what's important in their elections? Yeah, so what anything right off the bat that strikes you as unusual for these things? We'll kind of dive deeper into the study and some of the other things that they were looking at.
I'm surprised at how little healthcare actually shows up.
Healthcare. We'll kind of fill you in on who's concerned about what. So Hispanic Protestants, white Catholics, other Christians, and unaffiliated are concerned about healthcare. I'm not saying nobody's concerned about healthcare, but that's in their top three. So those are who is most concerned about those things. I'm also shocked about that. I feel like that is in the same way that fairness of presidential elections, healthcare is a major talking point right now. That is kind of in the national media. It's something that's discussed a lot, is universal health care or Obamacare or or recalling Obamacare, or, you know, we see a lot of discussion about people with pre-existing conditions. I assume that that would make the top three for a lot of these. But I think part of what bumps things or skews things is that fairness of presidential elections. Yeah. Since that is something that is like, and really even like 4 months ago, I'm not sure this would have made anybody's top three.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, this is something that's very thrust into this. And I think part of this is kind of the questions of voted, mail-in ballots, whether this is questions of voter fraud, you know, that there's stories out there of here's a mail carrier in X town that threw away mail, and then it's questions about that, or here's an X person who got two mail-in ballots in the mail, so it's creating kind of these questions, probably things that existed prior to this election season, but on a national radar, and it comes to an election this big, really probably don't make that much of a blip on our election if a handful of people were sent two ballots and only one gets sent back in. It's probably not that big of a blip.
Yeah.
But here, the fairness of this election has been thrown into question before it's even started. And I think that that is kind of interesting.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me to see how what we care about changes every 4 years, apparently, because under Obama and, you know, when Trump got elected, it seems like all we were talking about was healthcare, right? Like, Obamacare, is he going to overturn it? Like, what is the plan for healthcare? And now it's, you know, fairness of presidential elections, which, like we said, I don't think any of us really questioned, you know, before this past couple months even.
Yeah.
And now we have coronavirus pandemic, which obviously was not a thing 4 years ago.
We're just looking at the sheet, right? White evangelical Protestants are the only group here that do not have the coronavirus as one of their top three.
And
I think that we would probably tend to imagine this group, and this is, you know, now hypothesizing, but we tend to imagine this group as people who would deny that the coronavirus is something to be concerned about.
Yep.
Sure.
They would say, oh, we don't need to wear a mask. You know, and it's, you know, whether it's perpetuating the story of it's no worse than the flu or whatever it is, you know, it's just...
Yeah, I think stereotypically, you know, the white evangelical Protestant has tied itself and is tied in by culture to a Republican Party, to a much more conservative party. And we have a conservative Republican president who historically is even on tape said he's downplaying the virus. And so it's no surprise that if this is tied into that, and again, I think by both their choice and by the culture's perspective, sees white evangelicals as this tied into that party, it would be no surprise it's not on the list. It does make the list the top three of every other demographic.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Every other group that they have kind of segmented off into this list, coronavirus pandemic is in their top three. For the majority of them, it's number one.
Yeah. What's kind of interesting to me about the white evangelical Protestant is two of their top three are things that they've historically been concerned about for decades. Where everything else seems to be sort of like hot button topics and stuff. Two out of the three, abortion and terrorism.
Yeah. Terrorism is an interesting one. Let's maybe take a second to talk about that. We will talk a little bit about abortion. I think that's the one that's hard to discuss on any kind of religious ceremony because there's going to be no way you say anything about it without making somebody mad. And I will say probably you're going to make everybody mad. You know, like if you have any kind of nuanced view that's not an extreme, you're going to make both sides mad.
Yeah.
And so, but terrorism is interesting because that is on the white evangelical Protestant list of something that they are concerned about. And for me, I don't know what the grand total of numbers, there's 10, that's going to be pretty low on my list.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't see it as a national thing that I'm worried about. Not to say like terrorism happens. It happens all around our world on a daily basis. In America, right after 9/11, I think this could be its high point. But since then, I think we've taken many issues and concerns, especially foreign terrorism, to reduce that number. If it was segmented out of nationalist terrorism, I would be more concerned. I'm more concerned about some militia, backwoods militia with guns.
Kidnapping a governor, for instance.
Yeah plotting to kidnap a governor.
Or hypothetically speaking.
Or inciting violence or things like that. than I am about foreign terrorism. I mean, yeah. I just don't see that as, for me, well, again, for me personally, I just don't see that as a big issue.
And how much does who the president is affect what the policy on terrorism is? Yeah. Like, nobody wants terrorism to happen.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Everybody's on board. Terrorism's bad. Right. Let's work to stop it. And so, yeah, I would agree. This is not, because I don't think it's going to make a difference. It's not going to make as large of a difference who's in the office of president.
Policy change is not going to affect that as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think probably, you know, I think for some members of this white evangelical Protestant group, for them, terrorism, maybe not just be foreign terrorism, but has kind of the same national or local terrorism, but maybe flipped from kind of the things that I'm concerned about. You know, I'm concerned about rogue militia groups going out, you know, to harass and terrorize, like you said, kidnapping a governor. Mm-hmm. They might be more concerned about Antifa or, you know, rioting or looting. And that might be lumped into terrorism in their mind. So, you know, so that's interesting. And then also what I found interesting, only our black Protestants would be concerned about racial inequality.
Yeah.
That the other groups are not not in their top three. You know, they're all concerned about it, but nobody has that as high. And obviously it makes sense to be on a black Protestant list, but it's nowhere else.
Yeah.
That's another one that kind of, it pops up in one place and nobody else has it.
Interesting, the black Protestant group also has the most unity, if we will, in their top three. I mean, these numbers are kind of the percentage of people that ranked them in their top three. They had they had coronavirus, racial inequality, and fairness of the presidential elections at 79, 76, and 68% respectively. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, the white mainline Protestants, their top three were at 55, 53, and 51.
Yeah.
And even the white evangelicals were only at 63, 62, and 57. So
the vast majority, the lowest on the black Protestants is higher than the highest on anybody else.
It's just, it's interesting to see how that plays out a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. I think if you're a member of a black Protestant church, you probably have much more of a common world view with one another than maybe other members of your community or anything. Yeah. I think that does create kind of a unity of spirit, so to speak. Whereas even in the mainline Protestant, which we are part of in the LCA, we have much more of a wide, diverse group of views of even like religious understanding and how we perceive things. Yeah. I think that would be much more diverse.
Yeah, because even within mainline Protestants, even if we agree on a lot of theological issues, that might play out very differently in how we understand that to mean how we interact with the political issues of our time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what I find interesting is we're looking at Christians here. And for me, you know,
except for the one that says non-Christian religion.
Except for the,
we're unaffiliated.
We're non-Christian religion. But we're really talking about the Christian sides of things. We're not really getting into that thing. And I think that's fine for us as a podcast. That's what I think what we're about. Is just seeing, like, for me, the idea that our Christian identity should be first and foremost who we are. Before we're anything else, that should be at the center of, like, I'm a redeemed and loved child of God. Should be right there at the forefront of who we are. And if that was the case here in America, I would expect, you know, that would kind of align us with one another who have that same point of view clearer and easier. But it seems, based on my look at this study, that's not the unifying thing here. Yeah. The Christianity does not make us concerned about the same thing. And I bet if there is a, you know, Beyond Sunday version of an evangelical podcast, they might say the same things and say, but we're thinking right as Christians, and all these other Christians are wrong. And here we could easily say, well, I think we're thinking right as Christians, and all these, and they're wrong.
I'm imagining this like bizarro world where
there's evangelical three of version. Us in a different room with evangelicals. Exactly.
It's crazy.
We have our Chick-fil-A in front of us.
Look, I like Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't judge Chick-fil-A.
Sure.
Yeah. You like Subway.
Canned crab meat.
You wanted chocolate cake and a ham sandwich.
I didn't say I wanted it. I was forced to make a choice, and I made a choice, and I stand by it.
The donut burger.
Didn't know that was an option. Right.
Anyway, not to derail.
Too late.
But it definitely seems, you know, and I think that this is probably something I've seen coming for a while, and now we're just seeing the evidence of it. No longer is our Christian identity the primary identity, even for American Christians, that your political identity might be more important to how you perceive and view the world, and that is helping shape and mold your Christian point of view and not the other way around. And again, I think if you're a white evangelical, if you think the top three things are abortion, fairness of presidential election, and terrorism, you might be saying the exact same things about mainline Christians, Catholics, black and Hispanic Protestants. You might be thinking the exact same thing. But I think that the lack of unity across the board is interesting to me. You know, I think that we see that. And then finally, I think we have to talk a little bit about, on this study, abortion. You know, that's the primary thing. It does not appear on anyone else's top three, including the Catholic Church, which is a major part of their spiritual platform, especially how they engage in a political world, is abortion. But their members do not have that as their top three. But the white Catholics and Hispanic Catholics find at least three other things that are more important. White evangelicals have it number one. So what do we think? Why is that such a big deal for white evangelicals or not as a big of a deal for other aspects of Christianity?
I can't speak for the white evangelical church because I'm not one.
I'm not a white evangelical church.
I'm not a member of the white evangelical church. I would not, if I were not a pastor, the white evangelical church is not where I would go to find my spiritual home. I know this about myself, so I can't speak to that. I can say for myself, abortion is a serious thing. And I just don't feel like a law is the way to address this issue. Like, I feel like there are other paths through which we can honor and value life. And so I would agree that we need to value life, that we need to live, and we need to make adoption valuable options. We need to really invest in those resources so that those are safe options and meaningful options for people. I just, for me, on a national level, banning that sort of behavior does not, it doesn't matter to my spiritual life. I don't want to say it doesn't matter to me, but it does not affect my spiritual life directly if that is banned or not at a national level. I want to work at a local level and with people I know to move through these very, very difficult times, because the vast majority of these situations are not what they are depicted as in modern media, right? It's not just a casual, oh, well, let's just throw this out and move on with the day, right? Which, I mean, feels disgusting even just using that hyperbole. But it is people, or it is couples who are put into horrendous choices. And to say, oh, well, we as the government know what's best in all of these situations, it just doesn't ring true to me in a lot of ways. And so I don't find it to be the primary issue on which I vote about something. And so I don't know why that is for them. I don't know.
I think, so I do come from the evangelical Protestant church. So I think for me, it, I'm going to try and be really careful here with what I say, but I think it makes a lot of sense with the sort of church culture. You know, there's a very strong, like, we are, I hate to use the word, but like crusading for something. We're fighting for something. You know, we're trying to make our country, you know, a Christian country. And for whatever reason, abortion has become sort of the hot button issue. Like, this is the massacre of our time type thing. And so with that sort of culture of, you know, we're going to be very active politically, it makes sense, I think, that voting to make it illegal is sort of the stance that they take.
And I think, you know, and I will say this, if you at your core are convicted on this idea that, you know, the unborn are living souls by God, and you see abortion as murder. Now, that doesn't mean you as a listener believe that, or even around the table you believe that. But that is, so
hypothetically,
you believe that. I would expect that to be number one. I'm going to say, I think that should be their number one thing if that's what you believe. If you think that is true, that would be the most important issue in our country at this time.
I disagree.
Well, again, I think if you think that is literally the murder of a human being and it happens a million times a year, what would be more important?
Well, I expect it to be important to you for sure. But I think philosophically, I think that's a debate that you can have and still hold a stance that addressing it by making it illegal across the board is not the way to approach that.
Well, again, that's where we get into the nuance of, like, how does this, what does abortion at the national level, at the government level look like? But I do think if that's what you believe, it should be very, very important. Yeah. So I'm not surprised it is on the white evangelical list. That is something that's big in evangelical churches for, I think, a resounding drum. I've seen many, many comments on Facebook from Christians who are struggling with, like, I ally myself closer to the Republican Party, especially around the center of abortion. Mm-hmm. I find my Donald Trump as a president and person extremely distasteful. Mm-hmm. What do I do in this situation? Yeah. And the debate often comes down to, well, you have to vote for him because for abortion.
Yeah.
That's the compelling reason to get there.
Yeah.
For me personally, on the national level, on the governmental level, on the you know, whatever we put into our society, I think aligning ourselves on the things that we all can agree on makes more sense, whether that's keeping women who don't want to become pregnant, giving them every resource possible there, seeing families, couples, or single mothers who say, we would like to have a child, but the financial aspects of it are just overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Daycare alone is cost more than I make in my job. Yeah. How could I rationalize keeping a pregnancy? Those are the things that we can all say, removing every possible, one, preventing unwanted pregnancy from happening, and then two, making every woman who is pregnant and has even the slightest desire to bring the baby to term, making that as attractive as an option as possible. Mm-hmm. That helps, I think. I think that would help lower the abortion rate much more than just passing a law in Congress. I don't think that's going to really do much to lower the abortion rate at all. I think it just will create more unsafe abortions and not really do anything to address this issue. And I personally, my theology comes from a place of, it's really hard for me to say. I saw, since my wife and I did fertilization to help get pregnant, we got to see our baby at like 10 weeks. We got to see an ultrasound, you know, very early on, little gummy bear. And it's really hard because I look at that and I was like, that just looks like my baby. I see my baby in that. And so it's really hard for me to not, and again, this is my personal feelings, not the ELCA, not you and David, to say like, yeah, that should be, abortion is a great thing for society. But I do think for a woman who's unable to care and concern for a child, it creates a really hairy, pickly situation that there's no good options anymore. Mm-hmm. And society's no longer giving them good options. So this is kind of the only option that they would see as viable to them at the time. And so taking that one option away does not make a better situation. I do think, you know, based on my theology and understanding of the Bible, God is for infants in utero, babies in utero, and for single moms. Mm-hmm. And putting those two things against one another does not help advance this, in my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. But for me, I would have no problem in this election or past elections voting for a candidate that wants to keep abortion legal or keep Roe v. Wade legal at the national level. I would have no problem doing that because I think there are better ways to go about making birth an attractive option than just removing abortion. Mm-hmm. I don't think that really helps babies or helps women. I don't think that really does anything. And I know that's complicated, and I'm sure, you know, probably every possible side is probably frustrated at least on some level, and I'm okay with that. So, you know. I think it's really tough. Like, when does a fetus become a life at conception, at birth? You're kind of forced into picking one. And for me personally, I'm like, I'm not really sure either is really correct.
Right.
And I don't know, but I don't know where else do you draw the line?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So. I think, you know, one thing to keep in mind too is abortion sort of came about to try and help with a problem, right? Something that is a problem.
Yeah.
Like, maternal mortality rates, for one thing.
Sure.
But it's all broken. Like, we broke it when sin entered the world, right? So it's not going to be all perfect if abortion is no longer legal or does not exist. There's still going to be problems.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's like, you know, pick one problem over the other, but yeah. There's just a lot of really nuanced, really difficult stuff in there that I think is way more layered than just make this illegal and it'll stop happening, you know, or...
Yeah. I can say at the time when Roe v. Wade was passed, the makeup of the Supreme Court was conservative, mostly nominated by conservative presidents. And at the time, the Baptist leaders of our nation were for it. Because, you know, like they were on board. And since then, it became a rallying cry for Christians against liberalism, against Democrats to ally against. But at the time that Roe v. Wade was passed, it was not this.
Yeah.
It was not this kind of a thing that they did not have this kind of national attention on it. It would certainly not be in the top three of most white evangelicals at that time.
Yeah.
Historically speaking. Yeah, but nobody else has that on there. I think whether that's they're okay with status quo or they just see more important issues on the board. I think it's going to be complex and difficult. All right, well, there's some other aspects of the study that I'd like to get into if y'all are okay with that.
Yeah.
All right, so so there are other trends that our evangelical brothers and sisters kind of buck here. So 35% of Americans approve of how Donald Trump has handled the coronavirus pandemic. That's not a lot. It's
about 35%?
About a third of Americans. But among white evangelicals, 76%, about three-fourths.
Wow.
So, again, huge gaps in between those two. So, yeah. America as a whole, not super impressed. White evangelicals?
Super impressed.
Yep. The majority of every religious group in the U.S. think that President Trump has damaged the dignity of the office he holds, except for white evangelicals. Only 20% thinks so. And 60% of white evangelicals think the country is moving in the right direction, and they're the only religious group with the right who have that in the majority who think that. This is odd. You know, again, like I said at the top, I would assume our Christian faith would ally us closer together, but that's just not the case.
I think this is a perfect demonstration of what we talked about in our Christian nationalism podcast several weeks back, right? That this is a group of Christians who have aligned themselves with a particular national view, and in order to be a good Christian, you have to be a good American that supports this particular candidate, and in order to be a good candidate, or sorry, a good American that supports this candidate, you have to be this particular branch of Christian, and those are now tied so tightly interwoven that you can't distinguish them from one another, that you can't take someone, if you're in this particular group, you can't separate your Christian identity from your desire to support Donald Trump. And if one or the other fails, then you're entering a crisis of faith, and you're not going to allow that to happen, so you're going to support Donald Trump at all costs, because that's what your faith now is hinging on, is the success of his presidency.
Yeah, also quoted in this study, like this idea of like in 2012, most groups stayed around this idea of like, could a publicly elected official who is immoral in their personal life, would that affect their policing in the professional world? Mm-hmm. White evangelicals were fairly low on that list. About 30% said yes, they could, that would be okay. By 2016, the numbers flipped. So now 70% said yes, 30% said no, kind of a thing. Yeah. So, and obviously what happened was, in my perspective, President Trump entered the scene. And so, like, I used to think that an immoral person would not be allowed to be president. From my perspective, Donald Trump is an immoral person.
Yeah.
So now I have to say it's okay because I'm going to pull that lever, you know, like, so either A, I'm pulling a lever and saying, I know what I'm doing is against my moral code, or I have to change my moral code.
Right.
You know, that's just kind of, I think, part of it.
A little bit of cognitive dissonance there.
Yes. And so I think this is an interesting point here too, to kind of close us up here, and we'll get your perspective on this. They asked the question, do you believe God has granted the United States of America a special role in global history? What do you think about that? And then I'll give us our results, you know, here in a second. But how would you respond to that? Do you believe that God has given the United States of America a special role in global history?
I would say that the United States of America has believed that God has given it a special role in history.
Sure.
I do not think that God has given the United States a special role in history.
Yeah.
That's both through my reading of history and through my reading of scripture. The only nation that God has given a special role to was Israel, and that was expanded to people of all nationalities, ethnicities, backgrounds through the gospel of Jesus Christ, where it broke forth to be for Gentile and Jew and Greek and slave alike.
Yeah.
And so does the United States have a special role in history? Probably. Is that because God ordained it to be so? I would struggle to make that argument.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that part of it, you know, like, you think of, like, the taming of the New World into, you know, people, you know, and I'm using those things in really rough quotes, you know, like, but, like, the expansion of Europe into the United States of America was happening at roughly around the same period as a Protestant revolution in Europe. So both those things, I think, are tied to one another. And so many of these expanded into the United States, whether pilgrims, new settlers were coming from a more Protestant background, fleeing kind of this Catholic rule in Europe, saying like, let's go to America. You know, like that's probably tied in. And so I think it's easy to kind of think that this new Protestant place that is being built is like this new Christian safe haven from Europe.
Yeah.
And then that translated, you know, 1776 hits and America becomes its own nation.
Woo!
Yes. You know, and this would be, you know,
old Eagles.
200 plus years after the Protestant Revolution. So it's plenty of time to really cement into world history. And now here's this nation that's kind of at least somewhat or at least perspective wise founded on this more Protestant point of view than a Catholic point of view. And so it's easy to say, like, for, I think, Protestant faith, like, this was our country. This was what we built, you know, for, so if you're white evangelical Protestant, I'd be like, this was the Protestant country, you know, that's being built.
Complete with rape, pillage, and plunder, but, you know.
Most countries at the time, I assume. So.
Bar for the course.
So has, you know, is the United States have a special role in global history? Well, of course. I mean, it's probably the most dominant superpower over the last couple of years. Hundreds. Whether that lasts another 100 years, you know, I'm not sure. You know, maybe not. So is the United States have a special role? Is that God ordained? I don't think so. You know, this is just the thing that's happening. Does God bless it? Does God not? That's impossible for me to say. But 71% of white evangelicals believe that. And they're the only religious majority who think so. So again, that's kind of an interesting perspective. So again, if you think U.S. has a special role, you think these are my top three, they align more closely with President Trump than with Vice President Joe Biden, easy to think you would go that direction. Again, I disagree with maybe that logic, but I at least somewhat understand it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think this is the most interesting how this thing closes. When asked whether the United States sets a good moral example for the rest of the world, nobody says yes.
Interesting.
Nobody.
I bet
thinks.
We all disagree on why. Though.
Yeah, probably.
There's the kicker. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's on board with the United States as a moral example for the rest of the world. And interesting to think, what would we have said 20 years ago?
Right.
What would it have been? Would we have said yes?
You want to know what's crazy?
Yeah.
20 years ago was like the year 2000.
I know. Y2K.
I don't know. Do you guys have this problem where like you hear 20 years ago and you automatically think the 80s?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But that's like 40 years ago.
Like, I am 20 in my head. So,
oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Well, I hear 30 years ago.
Not on my face,
ago,
but in my head.
Yeah. Definitely. That's the 70s. It's before I was born.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm old. Yeah. When did this happen? And it's only getting older. This is ridiculous.
This is awful.
Yeah. Time, it just keeps on ticking.
The world's horrible.
So here is the question.
We haven't had the question yet.
All right, this is my question, question. What's going to happen post-election? Will these Protestant Catholic groups, mainline groups, click back together?
No.
Yeah.
It does not matter who is elected. They are not going to reunite these Protestant Catholic mainline Black Hispanic groups.
Yeah.
It's not what will reunite these groups is Jesus in the last day, whatever that looks like, and however that comes, like that will be the thing. But until like this, I don't know. I don't see a way that these come back together, particularly not just with one presidential election.
Agreed. Yeah, whatever happens on November 3rd that evening as you're watching TV, I think we can safely say...
Probably the morning of November 4th and, you know, maybe
not
the
November
5th and 6th.
In case you're curious.
Might be November 6th, the way things are going. Sure. Who knows?
Or whatever, you know, whatever happens, you know, as a result of the election, I would agree. I think we're going to see perhaps a further divide amongst this this group of Christianity, the white evangelical Protestants, maybe a further divide between them and the rest of...
I think for me, like, that's the piece of our faith that's so crucial, is that like the election's incredibly important, and we absolutely have a role to go and vote and to go and participate in the democracy in which we are fortunate enough to live in, and, you know, do all those things. But we all have to stop acting like voting for a president is going to change our immediate day-to-day, and like it's going to change how we interact with our like electing a president is not going to change how I react when I see a statue of a homeless person in front of a church. The only thing that's going to change that is Jesus changing my heart. And you know, voting for a president is not going to change how I interact with my neighbor when they tell me their daughter had to have an abortion. It's not going to change how I interact with someone who tells me that their family has to go on food stamps, or that they're afraid of terrorism, or whatever it else it might be, or that they think the presidential election was unfair. Right, voting for any of that is not going to change my heart, and the only thing that's going to do that is a relationship with Jesus and a deep connection with a spiritual community that can support you, that can encourage you, that can challenge you, that can offer you perspectives that are not your own, and that can welcome you when you have perspectives that are not theirs. That's the only thing that's going to change this. And yeah, so even if you, well, when you vote, when you're done voting, go to church, go somewhere, go to church, and wear a mask when you do, but go to church. Like,
Yeah. Jesus will be Jesus, will be God.
Jesus be Jesus.
Regardless of the outcome of this election.
Yeah. All day he be Jesus-ing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, or even if you didn't, go vote. And if you haven't voted, go vote, whether you liked it or not. But let us know what you think. Share this with others. Let us know, do you agree with these top three priorities in your various demographic groups? That's what I was looking for. Yeah. You know, so send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. I don't, actually. If I'm a white mainline Protestant.
You don't agree with coronavirus, fairness, and crime?
No. One out of the three, I would say. Yeah. That's coronavirus, yeah.
What do you think? Do we want to go around? Do we want to do our top three? What would we vote for?
Yeah.
Want to get on here?
Sure, let's do it.
There's a little stinger. We can fade out and like nobody can ever actually hear what we're
saying. Yeah. Probably most people have stopped listening already. So.
Even better.
They said
I would say corona.
Yes.
I would probably say healthcare if that's like on the... I really want to know what else is on the list.
I know.
I feel like there might be more options here.
Well, what else? You know, you can you know, write in here if you have another thing that you're concerned about.
Employment seems like a good one.
Yeah.
But it's also one that I'm like, I just know the president has not nearly as much to do with employment numbers as we think they do.
Sure. I would say I'm either closest to unaffiliated or black Protestant. We could mash the two up.
Yeah.
An unaffiliated
black Protestant. Yeah.
Huh. No, that's been said about you, Elise. You seem like an unaffiliated black Protestant.
I give that vibe.
Yikes. Okay. With that, pretty sure it's time to sign off. We haven't signed off yet.
Yeah. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.